A few minutes later, the two men were sitting at a table in Hanrahan's with mugs of beer in front of them. Hanrahan's drinking and gaming establishment wasn't the fanciest saloon Matt had ever been in, but it was certainly clean and well-appointed. The brass rail along the bar shone from diligent polishing, as did the banister on the staircase that curved up one side of the big room. Crystal chandeliers sparkled overhead. The floor had sawdust sprinkled on it, as was common, but somehow it seemed neater than in most saloons. In a nod to Hanrahan's Irish heritage, shamrocks were even painted in the corners of the front windows. The sheriff thumbed back his hat.
We haven't been formally introduced. My name's Thomas Blocker. Been sheriff around here for a while. And like I said out there, I know who you are.
I appreciate you speaking up for me. Mr. Hanrahan was bound and determined that I was part of the gang holding up his stagecoaches.
Seamus Hanrahan is a good man, but his head's like a block of stone in more ways than one. Once he gets an idea in it, you almost need dynamite to blast it out. Just for the record, you aren't a spy for the gang, are you?
Like I told both Hanrahan and his daughter, I just rode into town a little while ago and didn't know anything about the robberies until I heard Miss Hanrahan talking about
them. Emily Hanrahan. Quite a girl. Always has been. Seamus raised her by himself, you know, and she's a handful. Grew up in a tavern back in New York City until Seamus came out here for his health. You wouldn't know it to look at him, a big bruiser, but Seamus's lungs aren't the best in the world. He needed drier, cleaner air. And when he got here, what else was he going to do except open a saloon?
Looks like a good one, too.
It's a nice place, all right. When Emily got old enough, she wanted to help him run it. Seamus wasn't having any of that. He made a deal with the stagecoach company to locate a station here, and he put Emily in charge of it so she'd have something else to do. She'd done a fine job, too. You can't blame those holdups on her.
I'm a little surprised she's not married. I suppose her pa runs off any young fellows that come around. He seems the type.
Yeah, he does. But mostly it's Emily's idea. She's pretty picky from what I hear. After a few of the cowboys who ride for spreads around here came into town and tried to court her, only to go limping back to their bunkhouses with their hides cut up by that sharp tongue of hers. The other young fella sort of got the idea they'd be wasting their time. So you're just drifting?
That's right.
Don't suppose you'd care to sign on for a deputy's job, would you? I've heard that you've packed a star from time to time.
That's true, but I'm not looking for a job of any sort right now.
Can't blame a man for trying. I could use some help tracking down those outlaws. Seamus may not think I'm trying to put a stop to the robberies, but I'm only one man, and I've got a lot of territory to cover. This is rugged country with plenty of places to hide. I've lost their trail every time I've gone after them.
If you want to try again, I could ride out there with you to... What was it Hanrahan called the place?
Tomahawk Pass. About 3 miles east of here.
Probably too late today to start, but we could ride out there in the morning and take a look around. Maybe pick up the outlaw's trail.
And you'd be acting in an unofficial capacity, not as my deputy?
That's the way I'd prefer it. Lawmen have to follow too many rules. It's too much paperwork, too.
That's the truth. But if you want to do that, Matt, I'd sure be glad for the help. Maybe you've got a better eye than I do. I'd like to think I'm a decent tracker, but I know there are better ones than me.
I learned from two of the best.
Sheriff Blocker drained the last of his beer.
Reckon I'd better get back to the office. Seamus will be coming in to tell me why those owl hoots went after this particular coach. My guess is that there was something valuable in that strongbox. Money for the bank, maybe? Alton Farnsworth, the president, gets shipments from the bank in Laramie sometimes.
That makes sense. But the outlaws would have had to know it was there.
Not that big a problem. You may not be a spy for the gang, Matt, but I'll bet they have them. All it would take is paying off somebody who works in the bank here or in Laramie.
Blocker heaved himself to his feet, nodded, and left the saloon. Matt thumbed his hat even farther back on his head, leaned back in his chair, and stretched his legs out in front of him. He had nursed his beer for about 10 minutes when his thoughts were interrupted.
Would you like some company, cowboy?
No, I... Oh, it's you.
Don't get excited. Isn't that what women always say to men in saloons?
Not women like you. Of course, I'm not sure if I've ever seen a woman like you in a saloon before, Miss Hanrahan.
Sit back down, and don't bother trying to be flattering. I told you I'm immune.
Emily pulled out one of the empty chairs at the table and sat down before Matt could help her with the chair. With a mental shrug, he resumed his seat as well.
I suppose you and Sheriff Blocker gossiped about me. He told you all about how my father arranged to have the stage stationed here so I could run it, didn't he?
He may have mentioned it.
Seamus thought I needed something to keep me busy. He knows I'd never be happy sitting around doing needlework, baking pies. Although I can bake a very good pie.
I'm sure you can, Miss Hanrahan.
Don't make poems out of my name. It's annoying.
Well, I didn't mean to. It just came out that way.
There's nothing you can say to me that I haven't heard before. All the way from, girls shouldn't be running stagecoach stations, to, gosh, I sure admire to marry up with you, Miss Emily Ann.
I don't plan on saying either of those things to you. You can run all the stagecoach stations you want to, as far as I'm concerned, and I don't have any plans at the moment to marry you or anybody else.
Good. Now that we have all that straight, I want to ask you again if I can talk you into signing on as a guard. You said you've had experience doing that, and from the way Sheriff Blocker talked about you, you're supposed to be hell on outlaws.
Sorry, I've already got a job.
Doing what?
I'm going to help the sheriff try to track down those road agents.
You're going after the robbers?
That's right. Sheriff Blocker and I are planning on riding out to Tomahawk Pass first thing in the morning.
Then you're going to be his deputy.
Nope, I'm lending a hand just as a citizen. I told him the same thing I told you. I'm not looking for a real job.
All right. But the return from Rock Springs to Laramie will be passing through here in a couple days, and right now I don't have a driver or a guard to take it. My father can drive if he has to, but I'd hate to send him out there alone.
Let me think about it. If you've got a couple of days before the stagecoach comes back through.
Sure. Suppose I could ride along with him. I can handle a shotgun.
Now that's not fair.
I don't worry about playing fair, Mr. Jensen. I worry about winning.
Emily strode out of the saloon. Matt watched her go.
Certainly a spitfire, all right.
After finishing his beer, Matt took his horse to a livery stable and made arrangements to leave it there. He went ahead and paid for a week's rent on the stall, figuring there was a good chance he would be around Buffalo Crossing at least that long. With that taken care of, Matt got a hotel room for himself. The clerk had heard about him. Most hotel clerks knew everything that was going on in a town somehow.
Are you going to be with us for very long, Mr. Jensen?
Don't know. I reckon we'll just have to wait and see. Where's the best place around here to get some supper?
That would be Henderson's restaurant on the other side of the street in the next block.
Much obliged.
Matt had left his saddle at the stable, but he still had his war bag and his rifle with him. He put them in his room on the hotel's second floor and then came back downstairs, planning to find the restaurant and get some to eat. A man was standing at the desk in the lobby talking to the clerk. As Matt reached the bottom of the stairs, he saw the clerk nod toward him, and the man standing in front of the desk turned toward him. This man wore an expensive-looking charcoal gray suit, a black vest, and a white silk shirt. His cravat had a diamond stick pin in it. His longish brown hair was lightly touched with gray. He managed to be slender and look well-fed at the same time. He was obviously well-to-do.
Matt Jensen! It's an honor to meet you, Mr. Jensen. My name is Radcliffe, Nicholas Radcliffe. I am the Artesian Saloon. I was hoping I could buy you a drink.
I appreciate the offer, Mr. Radcliffe. Do you make it to every stranger who rides into Buffalo Crossing?
Not at all. But not every stranger who rides into Buffalo Crossing is as famous as Matt Jensen.
I'm not that famous.
Don't underestimate your notoriety. You may not be as well known as your brother, but I assure you, there are plenty of people around who know who you are.
You know Smoke?
I've never had the pleasure, but now I'm acquainted with you. How about that drink?
Sorry, I was just on my way to get some supper at Henderson's.
Even better. I know George Henderson quite well. I'll make sure you get the best table and the best meal in the house. Come along, it's my treat.
All right.
And then we can go to the Artesian and have that drink.
We'll see.
They left the hotel and crossed the street and then went along the boardwalk to Henderson's restaurant. It was a nice place with curtains on the windows and white linen tablecloths. A far cry from the posh eateries Matt had visited in San Francisco, but not bad at all for a Wyoming cow town. George Henderson, the owner, was a balding, rotund little man who greeted Matt and Radcliffe effusively and showed him to a table in a corner next to a potted palm. The location was a bit secluded from the rest of the room.
Two of your finest steaks with all the trimmings, George. And the best bottle of wine you have.
Sure thing, Mr. Radcliffe. I'll be right back.
Seems like you're pretty well known in these parts.
The Artesian is the best saloon between Laramie and Rock Springs. I have a proposition for you, Mr. Jensen. Or may I call you Matt?
Call me whatever you want, but if you're about to offer me a job, the answer is no.
How did you know I was going to offer you a job?
It was just a guess, but two people have already wanted me to work for them since I rode into town, so I figured maybe you were going to make it three.
I was. I could use a man like you.
Doing what? Tending bar?
That would be a waste of your particular talents, wouldn't it? No, I'd be hiring your gun, Matt.
I'm not a hired killer.
Of course not. What I had in mind was hiring you to protect me. You see, there's someone in Buffalo Crossing who wants me dead. He's already made several tries, and it's only a matter of time until he gets me. Unless I can hire you to make sure that doesn't happen.
Just who is it that wants you dead?
Oh, you met him. His name is Seamus Hanrahan.
Henderson came back with the wine and glasses and poured while Matt thought over what Radcliffe had just said.
I'll have those steaks out here in just a few minutes.
You must rate pretty highly in this town to get such personal attention from the owner.
Like I said, George and I are friends. Also, I own stock in the bank, and it holds the note on this place. I'm sure George would treat me and my friends well anyway, but that doesn't hurt.
No, I don't reckon it does.
Radcliffe lifted his glass.
To an arrangement which will benefit both of us.
I haven't agreed to work for you.
No, but you didn't refuse outright either, so I still have hopes that we'll be able to conclude a deal. However, if you'd prefer, we'll simply drink to your health for now, Matt.
All right. I have a hard time believing that Seamus Hanrahan would try to have you killed.
Why? The man's from the roughest section in New York. I'm sure he was some of a shady character back there before he came west. He has the second most successful saloon in this town, and he wants to be first. What better way than by getting rid of the competition?
Wait a minute, I thought you looked a mite familiar, and now I recall where I've seen you before. You were in that crowd around the stagecoach Hanrahan brought in this afternoon.
Guilty as charged, along with half the other people in town.
And you were the fellow who made that comment about it not being safe to ride on the stagecoach these days.
Well, that's true, isn't it? There have been 8 men killed in 4 holdups, for God's sake. I'd certainly be nervous if I had to go anywhere on that stage, wouldn't you? Well, probably not now that I think about it. You're Matt Jensen, after all. But we're talking about Hanrahan trying to put me out of the picture.
Henderson came up again, trailed by a waiter carrying a platter with several plates of food on it. The waiter placed the food in front of Matt and Radcliffe.
I hope it's all to your liking. Let me know if there's anything else I can do for you.
Certainly, George.
When Matt smelled that steak, he realized how hungry he was. He picked up a knife and fork and dug in, and Radcliffe did likewise. They ate in silence for several minutes. The food was just as good as the wine, and steak was something he knew a little bit about.
A week ago, someone took 3 shots at me as I was leaving the Artesian one night. I was just lucky they missed.
You don't have living quarters in the saloon?
No, I have a small house on one of the side streets. I like to get away from business concerns at least part of the time.
Did you report the shooting to the sheriff?
I did. Thomas Blocker is fine for breaking up fights between rowdy drunks. Well, that's about all he's good for. He said he would investigate the incident, but if he found out anything, he never told me about it. I'm not sure he even tried.
Are you sure the shots were aimed at you? Maybe it was just some liquored-up cowboy letting off steam.
Well, the first one practically parted my hair, and the other two bullets came almost as close. I was pretty shaken up by the whole thing. But that wasn't the end of it.
Go on.
A few days later, someone tried to burn down my saloon. One of my bartenders caught a whiff of the smoke in time, thank God. We were able to put out the flames before they could spread very far, but you could smell the coal oil in the alley behind the building where it started. There's no doubt in my mind that the fire was deliberate.
If Hanrahan was behind that, he was risking his own saloon, too. Once a fire starts burning, you can't be sure where it's gonna go or how fast.
I'm sure he thought he was safe because his place and the Artesian are at opposite ends of town. He was counting on the fire being put out before it could reach him, but after it destroyed my saloon.
Maybe. Has anything else happened?
2 nights ago, someone threw a knife at me when I stepped out onto the porch of my place. It barely missed. I can show you the spot in the wall where it stuck.
That won't be necessary.
Then you believe me?
What I believe is that this settlement isn't nearly as peaceful as I thought it was when I rode in earlier today.
All little towns have their secrets, I suppose.
Did you tell Sheriff Blocker about the fire and the knife?
He knew about the fire, of course. It caused quite a commotion. I told him I was convinced it was set deliberately. And I told him about the knife as well, and suggested it was thrown by the same man who took those shots at me. He promised to look into it. So what about it, Matt? Will you help me stay alive and perhaps get to the bottom of this?
Well, I've already promised the sheriff that I'd lend him a hand.
Doing what?
Tracking down whoever's been holding up Hanrahan's stagecoaches.
You won't change your mind about that?
Once I give my word, I don't go back on it.
I suppose I wish you luck, then. The trouble the stage line is having is bad for the town. And that means it's bad for my business, too. But under the circumstances, I'm not going to pretend to feel any sympathy for Hanrahan. I do feel a little sorry for that girl of his, though. He saddled Emily with quite a problem, and she doesn't really deserve it.
I can pay for my own supper if you want, since I turned down your job offer.
Of course not. My invitations were made in good faith, and they still stand. I'd like for you to come down to the Artesian and have that drink with me.
Thanks, but I reckon I'll pass. I was on the trail for a long time today, and what I really want is to get some shut-eye.
I understand. Another time, perhaps.
We'll see.
Once you've handled that other chore, if you're still around town, I'd like to talk to you again about my problem. If I'm still alive, that is.
It's a deal.
Matt took a while to fall asleep. The conversation with Radcliffe had given him a lot to think about. But when he finally did doze off, he slept well and was up early the next morning. After having breakfast in the hotel dining room, which was simpler and not as good as Henderson's food, but still passable, he went to the livery stable and saddled his horse. The hostler gave him directions to the sheriff's office. Sheriff Blocker was standing on the front porch of the squat stone building that housed his office and the jail, enjoying his coffee. He raised the cup in greeting as Matt walked up leading his horse.
I figured you'd want to get an early start, Matt. All right if I call you that?
Sure, but I reckon I'll call you Sheriff. I was raised to respect my elders.
Hard to believe you've done as much as you have, as young as you are.
I got an early start.
My horse is in the shed around back. I'll be ready to ride in a few minutes.
Blocker was as good as his word, and 5 minutes later, the two men were on their way out of Buffalo Crossing, heading east toward the hills where Tomahawk Pass was located. Along the way, they passed Seamus Hanrahan's saloon, which was open but apparently deserted at this hour, and the stage station, which appeared to be closed.
Did the westbound stage go on to Rock Springs?
Yep, there's been no trouble between here and there, so one of the few drivers Seamus has left agreed to take it.
All the robberies have been between here and...
Pine Knob. That's the next town to the east. It's about 20 miles over some pretty rugged country most of the way. Like I told you, lots of places for outlaws to hide, and plenty of good spots for ambushes, too.
What happens if Hanrahan and Emily keep losing drivers and eventually nobody will take this run anymore?
I reckon Seamus will have to forfeit on his contract with the stage line. It'll be a bitter blow for him and Emily both. I'd hate to see it happen.
So would I.
How come? Seamus was pretty rough on you yesterday when you came into town.
He had a lot on his mind. Besides, he's in the habit of chasing off any young men who come around Emily, like we talked about in the saloon. Put those two things together, and of course he didn't cotton much to me right off.
And yet you're out here trying to help him.
I don't cotton much to outlaws.
They rode on toward the hills, drawing closer until Matt could see the pass between them clearly. It was about 300 yards long, but quite narrow, no more than about 40 feet at its widest point. Matt studied the twin hills, which were dotted with boulders, scrub pines, and clumps of brush.
They're called North and South Tomahawk Peak, but don't ask me how they got the names. It's been that way as long as I've been around these parts.
Rugged ridges stretched away from the hills on both sides, making Tomahawk Pass the best route through here. Matt could see why the road ran where it did. As they approached a couple of large boulders in the trail, he pointed at them.
Those are the rocks the bandits rolled down the hill to stop the stage?
That's right. Seamus was able to get around them, but he said it was pretty tricky. Old West never had time to, I reckon. There was probably plenty of shooting going on by then. They were hidden up there in the hills, I'm guessing, on one side, maybe both. Must have opened fire right after they started those rocks rolling. West and Tobe never really had a chance, poor varmints.
Hanrahan said they busted open the strongbox. Let's take a look and see if we can find any boot prints. Sometimes that's as good for identifying somebody as a picture of them.
Good idea. Whoa!
Leading their horses, Matt and Blocker walked over to where the stagecoach had been stopped. They could tell the location from the boulder still in the trail and the welter of hoof prints where the team had come to a sudden halt. Blocker rested a hand on one of the big rocks.
I'm gonna have to come back out here with a team of mules and haul these out of the road.
Did Hanrahan tell you exactly where he found the strongbox?
He said it was about 10 feet north of the trail, empty, with the lid busted open. Probably somewhere around there.
Blocker pointed. Matt handed his reins to the sheriff and went over to the spot. He hunkered on his heel to take a closer look at the ground. The surface was pretty hard here, but after a moment he saw a faint impression in the dirt. An irregular shape that might have been part of a boot heel. It had an odd half-moon mark in it where a piece had been gouged out of the heel, almost like the mark on an outhouse door.
Bushwhack!
Matt flung himself to the side as another rifle shot missed him. He hit the ground on his shoulder and quickly rolled toward the nearest boulder blocking the trail. The shots were coming from the hill on the south side of the road. The big rock would give him some cover. As Matt came to a stop, he glanced over and saw Sheriff Blocker crouched behind the other boulder. The lawman had his gun in his hand, but he wasn't trying to return fire. Matt understood why. The shot sounded like they came from a pretty good distance up the hillside, which put the bushwhacker out of effective handgun range. Matt climbed to his feet, but stayed low behind the rock.
You all right, Sheriff?
Yeah, I'm not hit, but we're pinned down.
It was true. Blocker had let go of the horse's reins when the shooting started, and both animals had run off down the road. Matt's horse was accustomed to gunfire, so he hadn't spooked as badly, coming to a stop about 50 yards away to crop at the grass growing alongside of the trail. Matt looked at his Winchester sticking up from the saddle sheath and wished he could get his hands on it.
At least they're not on both sides of us. If they had us in a crossfire, we'd be in a bad fix.
Yeah, but whoever it is can sit up there all day, and if we take a step out from behind these rocks, he's got us.
Matt lifted his hand and placed a couple of fingers in his mouth. His horse jerked its head and turned to look toward him. Then it tossed its head, broke into a gallop, and headed back up the road toward him. The hidden rifleman changed his aim and started shooting at the horse. Hoofs kicked up dust around the animal's flashing hooves. Matt burst out from behind the rock and dashed as fast as he could toward the slope. The bushwhacker opened up on Matt again. He left his feet in a dive that carried him into a small stand of scrubby pines. Tree trunks gave Matt enough cover that the odds of the bushwhacker hitting him now were low. Also, he was at a slightly worse angle now for the hidden rifleman to draw bead on. That didn't stop the bushwhacker from trying. Bullets bored into the trees near Matt. From the road, Sheriff Blocker was getting in on the fight, even though the odds of him hitting anything were small. The shots did serve as another distraction. Matt began working his way up the slope. He used every bit of cover he could find, including trees, rocks, and clumps of brush. After a few minutes, during which time he climbed probably 100 feet, he paused and looked back down. Matt could see the boulders in the trail, and he was surprised to see the blocker was looking around the side of one of them at him. The sheriff motioned toward Matt's right. Matt took that to mean the bushwhacker's location was more to his right. Matt nodded and angled in that direction as he started moving again. The rifleman was firing blindly. Not only that, but the shots gave Matt something to steer by. Matt came to an open stretch where there wasn't any cover. As he knelt at the edge of the brush, he saw powder smoke rising behind a jagged upthrust of rock about 20 yards above him. Matt was within revolver range now, but he couldn't see his enemy from where he was. Forcing himself to remain patient, Matt waited. After a few minutes, he saw movement as a rifle barrel was thrust over the top of the rock. It tracked toward him and he crouched lower, thinking that the bushwhacker had spotted him. The rifle stopped. Matt now knew that the bushwhacker hadn't seen him. The man was still firing blindly, sweeping the slope with lead in the hope of hitting something. Matt calculated the odds of leaping from cover and charging up the slope before the rifleman saw him and adjusted his aim. And they weren't very good. He needed something to buy himself some more time. After a moment of looking around, Matt found a broken piece of pine branch about as long as his arm from the elbow to the wrist. It was fairly thick and heavy. He balanced it in his hand for a moment and decided it would do. Straightening quickly, he drew back his arm and threw it. Matt launched into a run while the branch was still in the air. The broken branch dropped back down among the rocks where the bushwhacker had hidden. None of the shots came toward Matt. The bushwhacker had heard the branch fall and jumped to the conclusion that someone had snuck up behind him. Matt bounded up the slope, then jerked to the side and kept running. Matt weaved in the other direction. Another leap brought him to the side of the rock. He caught a glimpse of a man's leg and he fired on the run. The bushwhacker moved hurriedly. Matt angled in toward the rocks. The rifle barrel jabbed into view, but he was ready. Matt fired twice more, sending the slug sizzling past the Winchester. The man landed on the far side of the upthrust and rolled down the slope. Matt dropped to a knee and covered him. But he had a pretty good idea that the bushwhacker was no longer a threat from the loose-limbed way the man's body was moving. When the bushwhacker came to a stop and didn't move again, Matt circled behind the rocks where the man had been hidden, just to make sure no one else was back there. The hillside was empty, except for the empty shell casings that littered the ground. Sheriff Blocker called from the road below.
Matt? Matt, are you all right?
Yeah, this fella's done for, Sheriff.
Matt kept his Colt trained on the sprawled bushwhacker as he carefully approached the man. The rifleman had come to rest, lying on his back. Matt was close enough now to see the pair of blood stains on the man's shirt, as well as the one on his leg where Matt's first shot had struck him in the thigh. The man's eyes were wide open, staring sightlessly at the morning sky. Matt had never seen him before. He recognized the type, though, from the hard, plain, beard-stubbled features. He had swapped lead with enough owl hoots to know one when he saw him. Blocker came up the hill, still holding his gun.
You know this varmint, Sheriff?
Blocker studied the man.
I don't know his name, but I've seen him around the settlement.
Any particular place?
Not that I recall. In the saloons, more than likely. Maybe in the hash house. But I couldn't say that he hung around any one place. You think he's a member of the gang that's been holding up these stagecoaches?
That's the most likely explanation. Could be that the gang left a man here to keep an eye on the scene of the latest robbery to discourage anybody from trailing him.
Yeah. He was trying to discourage us pretty permanent-like, seemed to me. We'd better find his horse and take him back to town.
He's not going anywhere. We ought to see if we can pick up the trail of the rest of them.
You mean leave him here for the buzzards and the wolves?
Only until we're on our way back to town, anyway. When somebody tries as hard to kill me as this fella did, I don't worry too much about what happens to him.
No, that makes sense, all right. We'll see if we can find the signs left by the rest of the gang.
Their effort proved to be futile. Matt and the sheriff ranged all over the pass and the area around it, but failed to find any tracks they were sure had been left by the gang's mounts. The road was just too well traveled, and the surrounding countryside was too rocky. Not only that, but the first shot that had gone past Matt's ear had struck the ground where the partial boot print he had seen was located, obliterating it. That didn't really matter. The way that print looked was etched in his mind, and he would know it if he saw it again. Of course, there was no way to be sure the boot that had left it belonged to one of the stagecoach robbers, but at least there was a chance. Other than surviving the ambush, they hadn't really accomplished a thing. The incident had stiffened Matt's resolve, though. By the time they got back to Buffalo Crossing at midday, leading the bushwhacker's horse they had found tied at the top of the hill, Matt's mind was made up. The bushwhacker's body was lashed face down over the saddle. Matt left the sheriff to take the dead man to the undertaker's while he rode toward the stagecoach station. Bringing in a corpse like that caused quite a sensation in town, and the crowd followed Sheriff Blocker and left Matt alone. Emily Hanrahan was behind the desk in the stagecoach office when Matt walked in. Several ledgers were open on the desk in front of her, so Matt figured she'd been going over the station's accounts and didn't want to be distracted from the task.
What can I do for you, Mr. Jensen?
If that job offer's still open, I'm ready to ride shotgun on that stagecoach of yours.
What made you change your mind?
I rode out to Tomahawk Pass with the sheriff this morning.
Why would you do that?
Just to take a look around and see if we could pick up the trail of those robbers. We didn't, but we did get ambushed.
Are you all right?
Fine.
What about Sheriff Blocker?
He wasn't hit either. We got the bushwhacker, though. The sheriff's taking him down to the undertaking parlor.
Then that was the commotion I heard a few minutes ago.
I would have preferred capturing him so we could ask him some questions, but there wasn't really time to worry about that while he was trying to kill us.
Did the sheriff recognize him?
Only as somebody he'd seen around town a few times.
You mean the outlaws have been coming right into town? That's pretty brazen.
I reckon they figured it was safe enough.
Several of the survivors from the holdups mentioned that the bandits wore masks and had their hats pulled low. They knew it was unlikely anybody would recognize him. I ought to go down to the undertaker's and have a look for myself, though.
Are you sure that's a good idea?
I've seen dead men before. Couple of them just yesterday who were friends of mine, remember?
It wouldn't hurt to take a look, but I don't expect you'll recognize the fella.
So that ambush is what made you decide to accept my offer?
I don't like it when somebody starts shooting at me. That bushwhacker won't ever do it again, but I'd like the chance to meet up with some of his pards. I reckon riding shotgun will give me that chance.
Well, I don't know what to hope for. I don't want them holding up any more of our stagecoaches, but at the same time, I'd like to see them brought to justice for what they've already done. I think you're the best chance for that to happen, Mr. Jensen.
Call me Matt.
All right, Matt. Now, suppose you can call me Emily, as long as it doesn't give you any ideas.
You've made it pretty plain that I'd be wasting my time if I did get any ideas.
Yes, you would. Come on, let's go tell my father. Looks like he's going to be driving the stage.
I'm not sure how he'll take the news. He doesn't like me very much.
He'll like you better once you're sitting on that driver's seat next to him with a shotgun.
As Matt predicted, Seamus Hanrahan was cool to the idea of him going along on the stagecoach's next eastbound run.
You put me in charge of running things, Seamus, and I'm hiring Matt.
Hanrahan didn't argue with that, although it was evident from his expression that he wanted to. A couple of days passed without much happening. Matt spent some time in the station office talking to Emily, and while she seemed to warm up to him a little, she still kept her distance emotionally. And that was fine with Matt. He was looking for outlaws at the moment, not romance. He also spent some time in Hanrahan's saloon and took advantage of the opportunity to get to know the crusty saloon keeper better. He hadn't forgot about Nicholas Radcliffe's accusations against Hanrahan. The big Irishman got more valuable when Matt worked the conversation around to his early days in New York.
Aye, it was a rough time there in Hell's Kitchen. When I was but a wee lad, the gangs put me to work running errands and carrying messages for them. Me da was dead, and 'twas the only way I could help me poor old ma. I shudder to think about some of the things I saw in them days. There was this fella called Big Bill, and since he worked as a butcher, he always had this meat cleaver with him. And one time he... No, never you mind. I don't even want to think about it. When I got older and married Emily's ma, God rest her sainted soul, I was running a tavern that the gang had set me up in, but I knew I had to get out. That was no place to raise a family. As it turned out, Emily's the only family I had since her ma departed this world, bringing her into it. That just made me more determined to leave New York. I saved up enough to get us train tickets and some left over to start a business out here. And you can see the results. I started off small with barely a hole in the wall and expanded as the years went on.
You've done well for yourself.
Aye, it hasn't been easy. And going into the stagecoach business, well, 'twas quite a risk, let me tell you, lad. If I have to forfeit me contract with the line, I don't know what it's gonna do. I might lose everything.
Maybe if there were fewer saloons in Buffalo Crossing, you wouldn't have to worry about that.
The competition doesn't worry me. No other saloon in these parts can hold a candle to mine. No matter what happens, we'll muddle through somehow, Emilian and me. I'll do whatever it takes.
While he was waiting for the stagecoach run, Matt also kept an eye for a boot heel with that particular gouge out of it. He certainly couldn't go around asking men to show him their boots, not without arousing a lot of suspicion and getting some unwanted questions. But any time he saw a man with his feet propped up somewhere, he took an unobtrusive look at the heels of the hombre's boots. So far, that effort hadn't paid any dividends. Sheriff Blocker looked Matt up a couple of days after the ambush.
I went through all my wanted posters and didn't find that fella who jumped us. That doesn't really mean anything, though. There are plenty of owl hoots out there who don't have paper on them. Or maybe he does, and I just never got that particular reward dodger.
He wasn't shooting at us by mistake, that's for sure. He couldn't have missed that sheriff's badge of yours, shining in the sun the way it was.
I'm just glad he didn't use it for a bullseye.
The day that the eastbound stage from Rock Springs was scheduled to arrive at 11 o'clock, Matt was at the station early, carrying his Winchester. Emily looked at the rifle.
We've got a shotgun for you to take along.
I know that, and I'll be glad to have it, but I'm taking this repeater of mine with me, too.
When there's a chance you'll run into outlaws, can't have too many guns, I suppose.
The gang hasn't hit two runs in a row before, have they?
No, but that doesn't mean they won't. Things are getting pretty desperate for us, Matt. If we're held up again, the company might go ahead and cancel our contract, especially if there are significant losses. They had to make good on the bank shipment from the last time, and they weren't happy about it.
So there was money in that strongbox.
That's right. You're working for us now, so I guess it's all right to admit it. Mr. Farnsworth, the bank president, was having some cash shipped in from Laramie.
Is there going to be anything like that in the strongbox this time?
I don't know. Nobody's told me anything about it, if there is, but it's possible.
Seamus Hanrahan came in a short time later. The big man had traded his usual tweed suit for gray wool trousers and a butternut shirt. He was hatless, and he had a huge, long-barreled revolver tucked in the waistband of his trousers.
If you be thinking of trying a double cross, boyo, know that the first shot from this old hog leg of mine will blow a hole right through you.
Seamus, we decided to trust Matt, remember? We have to trust somebody.
How come you call him Seamus? He's your father.
Well, I called him Da when I was little.
'Tis because she's a rebellious, thankless child, and that's her way of showing her disrespect for her poor old Da.
Ha! Just look at him! How can anybody call a big, hulking brute like him Da?
Matt grinned. The deep affection these two felt for each other was obvious, no matter what they called each other or how many sharp words they exchanged. That was just their way. Old Ezekiel, the hostler, came into the office.
I see the dust from the coach outside of town. She'll be here in a few minutes.
They all went outside to wait. Matt saw the dust cloud rising west of town. In a moment, a dark shape was visible at the base of it, and that shape quickly resolved itself into a Concord stagecoach being pulled by a team of six horses. The coach attracted the usual attention from the townspeople as it rolled to a stop in front of the station. The dust cloud swirled over the four of them waiting in front of the station. When it blew away, Matt saw the driver and the guard climbing down from the box.
Any trouble, boys?
Nary a bit. We didn't see anything out of the ordinary, Mr. Hammerhand.
May the good Lord let it stay that way. Jake, give that greener to Jensen here.
The guard handed Matt the double-barreled weapon.
You riding shotgun from here to Pine Knob, friend?
That's right.
Better you than me.
The driver looked just as relieved as the guard to be leaving the stage. Both men took off their hats and slapped some dust from their clothes. Emily opened the coach door.
There'll be a 10-minute stop here, folks, while the teams are changed. You'll find hot coffee in the office if you'd like a cup.
Matt watched with interest as a couple of men and a woman climbed out to stretch their legs. All three were well-dressed. The two men bore a definite resemblance to each other, likely to be father and son. Judging by the possessive way the younger man took hold of the woman's arm as they went into the station, she was his wife. The older passenger looked at Hanrahan.
I know you, don't I?
That you do, Mr. Baxter. I'm Seamus Hanrahan. I'll be handling the team between here and Pine Knob.
I thought you owned a saloon.
I do, but my daughter's the manager of this station, so I'm helping out by driving the coach.
You'd better keep us safe. We've heard that road agents have been stopping these coaches. If my son and I didn't have to be in Laramie on business, I wouldn't be making this trip right now.
You'll be perfectly safe, sir. I guarantee it.
Baxter gave him a curt nod and went on into the station. Hanrahan turned to Matt with a shake of his head.
'Tis a bit of bad luck. Claude Baxter's a rich man, owns a piece of several gold mines, and 'tis well known in this part of the country that he always carries a lot of cash on him. If those bandits know somehow that he's on this coach...
Matt knew what he was getting at. Claude Baxter might be too tempting a target for the outlaws to resist, not just because of the money he might be carrying, but also for the ransom he would bring if they kidnapped him, his son, and his daughter-in-law. The run to Pine Knob had just gotten even more dangerous. Before the stage left, Emily drew Matt aside.
I overheard Mr. Baxter talking to his son. They've got $10,000 in gold in the strongbox to buy some mining equipment in Laramie.
Your father was worried about something like that. Don't worry, we'll get them through.
I hope so. If anything happens to that gold, we're ruined. Claude Baxter will see to that.
The stage rolled out of Buffalo Crossing on schedule, carrying the three passengers. As the settlement fell behind them, Matt looked ahead to Tomahawk Pass.
What do you think the odds are they'll hit us in the same place as last time?
They might, but there are plenty other places along the route where they can set up an ambush.
You were right about Baxter. He's got 10 grand with him.
Saints preserve us! The man's a fool! That's just asking for trouble.
Hanrahan slapped the reins against the backs of the team. Matt's nerves were drawn taut as they entered the pass. Sheriff Blocker had done like he said he would and brought mules out here to drag the boulders out of the road. The trail was clear ahead of the stagecoach. Hanrahan whipped up the team and went through the pass in a hurry, while Matt's eyes intently scanned the hillside, searching for any sign of an ambush.
Hanrahan, why are you going so fast? You're bouncing us around in here like a bunch of beans.
Just trying to get you where you're going on time, sir.
Well, slow down a little. We're not in that big a hurry.
Hanrahan did slow the coach, but only after they were through the pass. The road entered a long series of bends, curving between more hills that weren't as rugged as the two Tomahawk peaks. There were still plenty of places the gang of road agents could hide, but none that were set up quite as well for an ambush. Matt stayed alert anyway. He didn't plan on relaxing and heaving a sigh of relief until they reached Pine Knob. Several miles rolled by. They came to a broad, shallow creek that flowed over a gravelly bed. Hanrahan started the team across the ford. There were no hills close by to provide hiding places for the outlaws, but quite a few aspens and cottonwoods grew along the stream's banks. Matt cast a wary eye toward them and suddenly stiffened as he saw sunlight reflect off something.
Better whip up the team, Seamus.
One of the leaders threw up its head and then collapsed. That forced the rest of the team to come to an abrupt halt, leaving the coach halfway across the creek.
Get out!
Matt grabbed his Winchester from the floorboards. He threw himself off the box to the left. He landed in the stream, then rolled underneath the coach. Hanrahan followed Matt under the coach.
God damn it!
No, but the devils came close down their eyes.
Get down and stay there! They're not shooting at you!
Bullets smacked into the creek around the coach, and some of them sank into the big wheels, chewing splinters from them. Matt figured he and Hanrahan were the real targets. The outlaws should want the Baxters alive. The water was cold, since the creek was fed by deep underground springs and snow melt. Matt ignored its icy grip flowing around him and thrust the Winchester's barrel between the spokes of the nearest wheel. He spotted a muzzle flash and instantly returned fire. A man flopped limply out from behind the tree where he had been hidden.
You got one of the scoundrels!
Yeah, but there's plenty more of them and there's not enough cover here.
Matt looked around and spotted a long, gravelly sandbar that stuck up a couple of feet from the water, about 20 yards to their left. No shots were coming from beyond that spot, so Matt thought it might provide him enough cover to give him a chance. Matt pointed out the gravel bar to Hanrahan.
Make a run for it, Seamus. I'll cover you.
No, lad. I'm too big and slow. You go first, and if you make it, I'll give it a try.
Did that old horse pistol of yours get too wet to fire?
Not a bit. I kept it out of the water.
All right, keep them busy.
Matt lunged out from under the coach and sprinted toward the gravel bar. None of the hail of bullets hit their mark in the few seconds it took him to cover the distance. One last bound took him behind the long mound of gravel and sand. He threw himself down behind it and twisted back toward the stranded stagecoach.
Come on, Seamus!
Matt opened up on the trees with the Winchester, firing as fast as he could work the rifle's lever. Hanrahan clambered out from under the coach and launched into a lumbering run. Matt groaned inwardly as he saw how slowly the big man was moving as he stumbled along through the water. Suddenly, Hanrahan went down.
Seamus!
Hanrahan struggled to get up and then went still. Matt's attention was drawn away from Hanrahan's body as he looked upstream and saw several riders galloping along the creek bed toward the coach. They wore masks and had their hats pulled low. One of them fired, and the other leader in the team went down. Matt realized what they might be trying to do, but before he could react, a storm of lead tore into the gravel bank from the riflemen who were still hidden in the trees. As dirt and chips of stone sprayed over him, he had to duck as low as he could to avoid the barrage. When he dared to raise his head again, he saw that the outlaws had cut loose the two dead horses. A couple of the men were on the box now. The one handling the reins backed the surviving members of the team, then lashed them with a whip and sent them pulling around the bodies of the slain leaders. Matt dug out as many rifle rounds as he could and thumbed them through the Winchester's loading gate as the outlaws drove the coach out of the stream. Lunging to his feet, Matt raced after the vehicle. He didn't care if he hit anything as long as he kept the men hidden in the trees busy ducking instead of shooting at him. His long legs flashed as they carried him out of the creek. The outlaw handling the reins urged the team on to greater speed. Matt tossed his empty Winchester aside, and he poured on all the speed he could as he came up behind the coach. The rest of the gang couldn't shoot at him without endangering their own men, as well as the passengers. Matt knew he would only have one chance at this. Matt's leap carried him onto the back of the coach. He grabbed at the canvas covering of the rear boot and caught hold of one of the dangling ties used to keep the boot closed. He hung on as tight as he could as he hit the ground. The strain on his arm and shoulder were tremendous as he was dragged along. Grimacing with effort, Matt pulled himself up and reached with his other hand for the flapping canvas. He got it and hauled himself upward. The lower half of his body bounced and scraped along the ground, but he ignored the pain and grabbed for a higher grip. Slowly, laboriously, he lifted himself until only his feet were dragging. He kicked and got a foot on the boot. That took some of the weight off his aching arms. Teeth clenched, he pulled himself higher. Finally, Matt had both feet on the boot and was standing there rocking back and forth as the coach careened along. He looked down at his side and saw that his Colt was still in its holster. A brass rail ran around the top of the coach. Matt reached up and grasped it with one hand and then the other. With a firm grip, he started to climb. The two outlaws on the box hadn't noticed him yet, but the shift in weight as Matt pulled himself halfway onto the coach roof made the one who wasn't driving glance back. Hurry! The man twisted on a seat and clawed at the gun on his hip. Matt reached his Colt first. His bullet struck the man in the shoulder. The wounded outlaw toppled off the front of the box and fell under the pounding hooves of the six galloping horses. The other outlaw ducked as Matt fired again. He dropped the reins. They fell free, slithering off the box. Crouched on the floorboards, the man yanked his gun from its holster. Matt threw himself flat on the coach roof as the slug whipped over his head and he returned fire. A red-rimmed hole appeared in the center of the remaining outlaw's forehead. He fell to the side, already limp in death, and he sailed off the driver's box. Matt holstered his gun. He pulled himself forward until he spilled over onto the seat. He saw the reins flying loosely between the legs of the racing horses. There was no way he could reach them. The runaway team had to be stopped, though, and Matt saw only one way to do that. He held onto the seat with one hand and balanced for a second on the edge of the footboard along the front of the box. Then he leaped out into empty air. Matt landed on the back of the left-hand wheeler. The horse jerked under him, but he grabbed its mane and hung on. When he was settled on the horse's back and confident that he wouldn't fall off, he took hold of its harness and leaned over to grab the right-hand wheeler's harness with that hand. He hauled back, slowing him, and that gradually slowed the other horses in the team as well. After a couple of minutes, the coach lurched to a halt. Matt slid off the horse and ran back to the door. twisted the catch and yanked it open, worried about what he might see inside. Three pale, terrified faces stared out at him from the huddled shapes on the floor. The young Baxter had a pocket pistol clutched in his hand. Obviously, thinking that Matt was one of the outlaws, he thrust it out and started to pull the trigger. Grabbed his wrist and shoved his arm up just as the pistol went off. The bullet flew harmlessly into the air, well over Matt's head. Matt wrenched the gun out of the young man's hand.
Hold on, damn it! I'm not part of that bunch. I just saved you from...
Where are the rest of them?
Matt looked around, thinking that he might see the other outlaws galloping toward him, ready to wipe him out and take the Baxters prisoner again. But he didn't see anybody. There were shots coming from the direction of the creek, though. From the sound of the gunfire, somebody had come along and pitched in to give him a hand.
Let me turn this coach around. You folks will be all right now.
Turn the coach around? Absolutely not. I insist you take us onto Pine Knob as scheduled, young man.
Sorry, we're going back.
Matt slammed the door without giving him a chance to argue with him. He gathered up the reins, climbed onto the driver's box, and turned the stagecoach around. He sent it rolling back toward the creek. By the time they got there, it was all over. Matt saw a number of bodies sprawled in the trees and along the creek banks. A dozen men on horseback sat their saddles nearby, holding rifles. Matt recognized some of them from Buffalo Crossing. He recognized Sheriff Thomas Blocker as well, who was kneeling next to a man propped up against the trunk of a cottonwood. Matt's spirits leaped as he looked at the soaked, bloody, but very much alive Seamus Hanrahan. Matt brought the coach to a halt and jumped down from the box.
Saints be praised! You're alive, lad! I didn't think I'd ever see you again after that crazy stunt you pulled.
And I thought you were already dead when I went after the coach.
No, a fellow as slow as I am has to be canny. When I got hit, I decided I'd better go down and stay down. I figured if the scallywags thought I was dead, they might stop shooting at me. I kept me nose barely above the water, just enough to get some air. Like to froze to death in that creek before the sheriff and his posse come along. But I'll warm up sooner or later.
You didn't tell me you were going to be following the coach, Sheriff.
I didn't tell anybody until I was ready to ask for volunteers and ride out. It's not that I didn't trust you, Matt. I just didn't want to take a chance on word of my plan getting around before the stagecoach left. I have a hunch somebody in Buffalo Crossing is tied in with this bunch. I figure the man you killed a couple days ago was in town getting orders the times that I saw him earlier.
I agree with you. Did you take any prisoners?
No, they put up too much of a fight for that when we hit them. There wasn't time to be careful.
Well, maybe we can get around that. Let me take a look at the bodies. First, though, are you going to be all right, Seamus?
I've got a pretty deep crease in my side, but the cold water kept it from bleeding too much. Give me a week or so, and I'll be as good as ever.
Matt nodded. He left Sheriff Blocker wrapping a makeshift bandage around Hanrahan's torso and went to look at the dead outlaws. He checked their boots, and when he got to the fourth corpse, he found what he was looking for. He turned to the posse members who were sitting on their horses nearby.
Anybody know this man?
I've seen him before. I'm not sure where, though. Maybe in the saloon where I do most of my drinking.
Which one is that?
Don't tell that big Irish madman, but I'm talking about the Artesian.
You wouldn't happen to know the fella's name, would you?
I think I heard one of the saloon girls call him Dave.
That'll do. Much obliged.
Matt went back over to Blocker. Hanrahan had gotten to his feet. He was still pale, but he seemed steady.
I could do with the loan of a horse, Sheriff. It'll take you a while to gather up all these bodies, and I need to get back to town right away.
Blocker jerked a thumb toward the coach.
What about those three? Claude Baxter and his boy have been complaining about getting to Pine Knob so they can go on to Laramie.
Maybe you can get a couple of volunteers to take the stage the rest of the way.
I'll pay good wages. Or rather, I should say that Emily will pay good wages. I got to learn to stop butting into the girl's business.
What about that horse, Sheriff?
Take mine. It's that roan over there. If you're bound on the errand I think you are, though, I really ought to be doing it myself.
Trust me, Sheriff. I can handle this job.
Never entered my mind that you couldn't.
Matt's clothes had dried in the warm sun by the time he got back to Buffalo Crossing. He'd found his hat and the Winchester and recovered them. The rifle was now fully loaded, as was the revolver on his hip. Matt rode past the Stagecoach Station and Hammerhan Saloon without stopping. He was bound for the large building on the far side of the settlement that housed the Artesian Saloon. Although he still had some unanswered questions, there was no doubt in his mind that Nicholas Radcliffe was the mastermind behind the Stagecoach robberies. Rather than Seamus Hanahan wanting to put Radcliffe out of business, it was the other way around. Radcliffe had chosen to do that by going after the Stagecoaches, knowing that if Hanrahan lost his contract with the line, it would bankrupt him all around, including the saloon. Matt hadn't been in the Artesian before, but he knew where it was. It had big, fancy windows and a corner entrance. Matt dismounted, tied the sheriff's horse to one of the hitch rails, and stepped up onto the boardwalk to push through the bat wings. He found himself in a large bar room that bordered on elegance, especially for one that was located in a frontier settlement like Buffalo Crossing. What he didn't see was any sign of Nicholas Radcliffe. Matt went over to the bar. A bartender in a red vest came up to him.
What can I do for you, friend?
Is your boss here?
Mr. Radcliffe? No, I haven't seen him for a while. Maybe I can help you?
No, thanks.
Matt swung around and left the saloon. He swung up into the saddle and trotted along the street, passing Hanrahan's saloon. The doors of the barn next to the Stagecoach Station were open. Matt rode through them, figuring he would leave Sheriff Blocker's horse here with Ezekiel.
Ezekiel!
Puzzled, Matt dismounted and started to look around. It took him only a moment to spot a booted foot sticking out of one of the stalls. Matt drew his gun and hurried over. Ezekiel lay sprawled on his back in the empty stall. A bloody lump on his head showed where somebody had hit him. Matt dropped to a knee. The old-timer was still breathing. Feeling a little relieved by that, Matt started to stand up.
Just stay where you are, Jensen. You try anything, I'll kill the girl.
Matt slowly turned his head and saw Radcliffe standing in the doorway that opened between the office and the barn. He had Emily in front of him, with his left arm looped around her waist, while his right hand held the point of a small but deadly knife pressed into the soft hollow of her throat.
You're not even gonna make me go to the trouble of tricking a confession out of you, are you?
What would be the point? You've already figured it out. When I saw you come riding back into town, I knew it had all gone wrong. You were supposed to be dead by now, and the Baxters were supposed to be in the hands of my men, along with that 10 grand in gold.
Didn't work out that way. Sheriff turned out to be smarter than any of us gave him credit for, I reckon. He followed the stage with a posse and jumped your gang while they were trying to kill Seamus and me.
Matt saw alarm leap into Emily's green eyes.
He's fine. He was wounded, but he'll be all right.
In a way, that's a shame. I'm sure he would have preferred dying to coming back here to town only to find his daughter dead and both of his businesses burned down.
Those attempts on your life and that fire set behind your place were all phonies, weren't they? You were trying to frame Hanrahan and make it look like he was trying to kill you, rather than the other way around.
I didn't want any of the blame ever getting back to me. You see, Jensen, I'm a very cautious man. I came up with several different ways to get rid of Hanrahan or put him out of business, and in none of them would any of the guilt ever fall on me.
But now you're gonna murder his daughter and burn down his place?
It's awfully crude, I know. But I've run out of patience. You know the railroad's gonna be here in another year or two. When it arrives, the man who owns the best saloon in town will make a fortune. An absolute fortune, Jensen. And that's gonna be me!
I don't think so.
What's gonna stop me? I cut the girl's throat, I kill you, I set fire to the hay. Hell, I won't even need any coal oil for this one.
Problem is that once you've killed Emily, there won't be anything stopping me from killing you. You really think you can get me with that knife before I put two or three slugs in you? My gun's already in my hand, you damn fool. You don't have a chance in hell, and you know it.
Matt swiftly uncoiled from his crouch, brought his gun up, and fired. The man's head jerked back, and he toppled backwards. Radcliffe had been going for a left-handed draw of his pistol. Matt stood still for a second before he lowered the gun. Emily stared at him, her skin as pale as milk.
It's a good thing you're so blasted short. That way you couldn't hide behind you very well.
Short, am I? You could have killed me, you know.
Not likely. I was too close to miss.
Ezekiel, is he...
Knocked out, but I reckon he'll be fine when he wakes up, except for a headache.
And my father? He's really all right?
He's really all right.
Oh, good.
That Emily had gone and fainted on him. 2 days later, the westbound stage returned from Pine Knob. Now that the gang had been broken up, men were willing to hire on as drivers and shotgun guards again. When the coach rolled to a stop in front of the station, Matt, Emily, and Ezekiel were waiting for it. Ezekiel and the driver got the change in the team. The guard climbed down and dug something out of a pocket that he extended to Matt.
Got a telegram here for you, Mr. Jensen. It got sent to Laramie. Then a rider carried it to Pine Knob, and we picked it up there.
Somebody must really want to get in touch with you, Matt.
Yeah, I...
That looks like trouble.
Yeah, some smoke. Preacher needs our help. So I gotta be riding.
So soon? I was hoping that, well, that you might stay around here for a while.
You sound like you're disappointed. I thought you were immune to my charms.
Damn you, Matt Jensen! Don't you make fun of me! Don't you... Oh, the hell with it.
Emily came up on her toes, threw her arms around his neck, and pulled his head down so she could kiss him. After a long moment, she took her lips away from his.
Guess I'm not as immune as I thought I was. You really have to go?
I do.
Then I won't try to hold you. Oh, it's not like I don't have plenty to do, running the stage station and the saloon until Seamus is back on his feet. But if you're ever back in this part of the country...
I'll stop in and see you.
You'd better.
Emily kissed Matt again. As he rode away, Matt knew that he may never return. Anytime he got together with Smoke and Preacher, the air was always thick with flying lead. And when the Indian Ring was involved, it was even worse. Even so, there was a little smile on Matt's face.
Yeah,